Hello, I'm Charlotte from PleasureMechanics.com and welcome to this week's Just the Tip episode of the Speaking of Sex podcast. Each Wednesday we share a provocative or fascinating excerpt from one of our favorite resources about sex and relationships and then have a short conversation about it. At the end of each episode we offer you a tip or challenge for you to explore in your life. If you want deep, penetrating conversations, keep tuning in to our Friday episodes. But for thrilling quickies, we're bringing you Just the Tip each Wednesday. This week, I'm bringing you an excerpt from the book Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love by Helen Fisher. Dr. Fisher is one of the country's most prominent anthropologists. She has a number of TED Talks and is a highly well-respected researcher and professor. There are two pieces I want to focus on here. One is the difference between romance and lust, and the second is how do we keep romance alive in long-term relationships. Here we go. Fisher writes, "Scientists have recently established that lust and romantic love are associated with different constellations of brain regions. In one study, researchers scanned the brains of a group of young heterosexual men using the fMRI brain scanner. The men were shown three types of videos. Some were erotic, some relaxing, some related to sports. Each volunteer wore a custom-built pneumatic pressure cuff around his penis to record firmness. The pattern of brain activity was quite different from the one we found among the lovesick subjects in our brain scanning project. Lust and romantic love are not the same." Later on, she goes on to write, "In spite of this evolutionary trajectory of loving, in which romantic passion gradually transforms into feelings of deep attachment, these three brain circuits, lust, romantic love, and attachment, can ignite in any combination. Alas, many of us also have periods in our lives when these three mating drives, lust, romantic love, and attachment, do not focus on the same person. It seems to be the destiny of humankind that we are neurologically able to love more than one person at a time. You can feel profound attachment for a long-term spouse while you feel romantic passion for someone in the office or your social circle, while you feel the sex drive as you read a book, watch a movie, or do something else unrelated to either partner. You can even swing from one feeling to another. In fact, as you lie in the dark at night, you can become engulfed by feelings of attachment to your spouse. Then seconds later, you feel crazy romantic passion for someone you've just met. Then you become aware of sexual craving as an unrelated image sweeps into mind. As these three brain circuits fire interactively, yet independently, you feel as if you're having a committee meeting in your head. Wild is love, as the song goes. Lust, romantic love, and deep attachment can visit you in such different and unexpected combinations that many people have come to believe the mixture of sensations that draws you to another is mysterious, elusive, perhaps even heaven-sent. But once you begin to envisage lust, romantic love, and attachment as three specific mating drives, each producing many gradations of feeling that endlessly combine and recombine in countless different ways, love takes on tangibility." End quote. My challenge to you this week is to think about what you need to do to make peace with these ideas. We have this concrete scientific evidence here from a well-respected researcher that your relationship isn't broken if the mutual passion has waned. In fact, there is some biological inevitability that this will happen over time. Additionally, there's nothing wrong with you if you feel passion for a coworker, even though you love your partner. It is scientifically confirmed that lust and romance are not the same and can be felt independently at the same time. Meaning it really is okay if you feel love for your partner and intense attraction for another. You are not crazy, you are just human. What matters is what you choose to do with having any kind of feelings outside of your primary relationship. That is entirely up to you and your ethics, values, and ideals. But having the feelings is very natural, normal even. To have feelings for someone other than whom you are technically devoted to does not even mean there's anything wrong with your relationship. It's just how we humans are wired. So many of us feel tortured by this reality of experiencing different levels of passion or excitement for different people at various points in our lives. What happens if we don't see those feelings as problematic, made peace with what is, and then go on and decide what choices you want to make? My hope is that through understanding this, some of you will experience a little bit more freedom within yourself so that you can be more present with enjoying your current erotic life instead of wishing and longing for something else. She goes on to say, in a section on why romantic passion recedes with time, in the beginning, you spend weeks and months wooing with long emails, intimate conversations, shared adventures at restaurants, concerts, parties and sports events, and joyous times in bed. You work endlessly to impress and charm your beloved. At times, you feel such ecstasy you can't sleep. Then as the months turn into years, your romantic bliss begins to ripen into a deeper union, long-term attachment. Romantic fervor continues in some long relationships, and this passion can still become intense during vacations and at other times of novelty and adventure. But the wild ecstasy, fierce energy, and obsessive thinking generally diminish, giving way to feelings of safety and contentment. Exactly how the brain quells the early storm of romantic passion is unknown, but whatever the biological cause, the body gradually settles down. This decline of romantic love is undoubtedly evolution's doing. Intense romantic passion consumes enormous time and energy, and it would be decidedly disruptive to one's peace of mind and daily activities, including rearing children, to spend years obsessively doting on a lover. Instead, this brain circuitry evolved primarily for one purpose, to drive our forebearers to seek and find special mating partners, then copulate exclusively with him or her until conception was assured. At that point, ancestral couples needed to stop focusing on each other and start building a safe social world where they could rear their precious child together. Nature gave us passion. Then she gave us peace, until we fall in love again. Making romance last. Still, some people do remain passionately in love for a lifetime. Some couples married more than 20 years report that they are still in love. In fact, in one remarkable survey, men and women married more than 20 years tested higher on romantic passion for one another than did those married only 5 years. Their scores looked much like those of high school seniors. I met such a couple recently. At a business dinner, I found myself sitting beside a handsome, bright, affable, middle-aged president of a major American non-profit organization. When he discovered that I was writing a book about romantic love, he told me he was still in love with his wife. They had been married 26 years. The following month, I was fortunate enough to meet his spouse, a woman of elegance and literature. Unaware of my conversation with her husband, she avowed that she was still very much in love with her mate. So when our husband joined us, I took the liberty of asking both of them how they had kept their passion percolating. She said humor, he said sex. I was not surprised with either answer. Humor is based on novelty, the unexpected, which elevates levels of dopamine in the brain, and sex is associated with elevated levels of testosterone, which in a chain reaction can increase dopamine as well. But I suspect this charismatic couple kept love alive in another way as well. Both had exceptionally exciting careers and did many unusual things together. I think their lifestyle stimulated dopamine levels and maintained romantic passion. It is not customary to love what one has, wrote Anatole France. To counteract this conventional thinking, therapists advise people to follow several standard practices. Commit, listen actively to your partner, ask questions, give answers, appreciate, stay attractive, keep growing intellectually, include her, give him privacy, be honest and trustworthy, tell your mate what you need, accept his and her shortcomings, mind your manners, exercise your sense of humor, respect him, respect her, compromise, argue constructively, never threaten to depart, forget the past, say no to adultery, don't assume the relationship will last forever, build it one day at a time, and never give up. These and many other wise habits can sustain feelings of long-term attachment, but none is likely to elevate levels of dopamine or maintain romantic passion. Other tactics, however, can keep this flame burning. Let there be spaces in your togetherness, advised Kahil Gibran. Although the Lebanese poet probably didn't know it, this was good advice for sustaining the biology associated with romantic love. As mentioned earlier, when a reward is delayed in coming, the tardy delivery prolongs the activity of dopamine cells, speeding more of this natural stimulant into reward centers of the brain. Although men appreciate privacy and autonomy more than women do, for both sexes, space probably helps sustain romantic passion. Given what we know about love, surely it would also be wise to engage in what therapists call dating time. Develop an array of common interests and make a point of doing novel and exciting things together. Variety, variety, variety. It stimulates the pleasure centers of the brain, maintaining the climate of romance. End quote. We've spoken in other podcasts about how to keep long-term relationships exciting. We emphasize that you need to keep life interesting by doing new, stimulating things together in and out of the bedroom. I will fully admit that I love reading that same advice that we give regularly in this highly respected author's book. And I think we all need to keep hearing this hopeful, practical piece of advice until we are really putting it into action. Additionally, my challenge to you this week, if you are in a long-term relationship where excitement has waned a bit, or if you wish to take preventative steps, is to consider what kind of excitement and novelty will you introduce into your relationship to increase your excitement in life and thus with each other. I hope there's some nugget of useful information in this piece today for you to allow you to experience a little bit more freedom, a little bit more passion, and a little bit more compassion for yourself so that you can experience more sexual fulfillment and satisfaction. Remember, if you want some guidance in exploring novelty in the bedroom, we have our erotic mastery courses to guide you in mastering new erotic skills to experience more orgasmic pleasure, skill, and confidence. Check them out over at pleasuremechanics.com and use the code JUSTTHETIP for 20% off the course of your choice. I'm Charlotte from pleasuremechanics.com, wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.